Hey everyone, welcome to episode 4 of the Denver Crux podcast. I'm your host, Jared Hazel, and today we have Dr. Emily Hartnett. She's an occupational hand therapist out of Denver, specializing in rock climbing injuries. Emily was a wealth of information for treating and preventing hand injuries, and she's got a true passion for getting climbers back on that wall faster. Emily can be reached at hart-net.com, that's hart-net.com, and also Instagram at handshartnet. We are very grateful to get Emily on today and all the information that she was able to share. So I think this is going to be a rare treat for those seeking any type of knowledge on treating the hands and being able to prevent the common rock climbing injuries that so many of us incur. So hope you guys enjoy. Welcome to the Denver Crux, a podcast dedicated to the Colorado climbing community and their passion for adventure and pushing the limits of the human spirit. Cool. I got my coffee. You got some backup water, you know, and yeah, we're good to go. All right, cool. So, all right, we've got Emily here. Emily, tell us who you are.
Hi, I'm an occupational hand therapist located in Capitol Hill of Denver. I'm specializing in hand-related rock climber injuries.
Very interesting. So I take it you were a climber before you entered this occupation?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I've been climbing for about 6 years, and this is my occupation for about 3 years.
Very, very intriguing. All right, so let's bring it back to the beginning. Where did you grow up? Are you a native Coloradan? Or
I am not. I'm originally from New Jersey, and climbed only inside there, and then started climbing outside when I moved to California, and then moved here about 2 years ago.
Interesting. So only the gym world is where you started.
Yes.
So 6 years ago, you kind of, like, how did that happen? Are you just, like, hanging out in college and your friend's like, hey, check out the gym or what?
Pretty much. I had a good friend who was in my major who took me to the climbing gym for the first time when we were in graduate school.
Interesting. And what was the first experience like?
Ooh, it was a little rough. It wasn't very good.
Did you have the whole, like hesitation, even though it was inside, of, like, is this rope going to hold me?
Right.
I don't know if I should go up there.
A little bit. Yeah, definitely.
And then you made the switch over to Cali.
I did. That was my first job out of college.
Okay. Same field?
Yeah. I was working as a hand therapist for the Tesla factory. It was super fun.
Like Tesla, the cars? The same
yes,
thing?
Yes. Yeah. They had a company of hand therapists and a hand surgeon contracted to them for hand injuries.
Like, so specifically, you were working with the employees of Tesla for their hand injuries?
Yes.
How many hand injuries do the people of Tesla get?
Ooh, quite a bit. Their higher-ups have a lot of repetitive strain injuries, carpal tunnel and trigger fingers. Their factory workers have a lot of more traumatic injuries, like crush injuries.
I know what carpal tunnel is. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, I'm kind of an idiot in this, but generally from typing too much.
Yeah, basically.
And then what is trigger finger?
Trigger finger is when our long tendon that helps us flex our finger gets stuck underneath our first pulley. So our finger will get stuck down with our metacarpal knuckle bent at about 90 degrees.
How does one get triggered? I mean, I'm like imagining, like, are people just like going to the gun range too much? Like, how
That's
does
where
that...
it got its name.
Really?
Training new soldiers to use guns. Mm-hmm. Now it comes a lot from computer use, clicking the mouse over and over.
Oh, just that?
It could, yeah.
Like, so do you see like a huge pattern of like right index finger?
Like, fairly often. Uh-huh.
That's the one. Just click, click, click.
Exactly, yeah.
Interesting.
I had one lady who had it from crocheting so much she got it in her thumb. Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Wow, I never knew that was... I don't know. I never knew it was such a major, like, injury at the corporate level.
Oh,
that
definitely.
That they have to bring a team in for that. Okay. I mean, that's very professional. Good for them. All right, so you're in Cali, working for Tesla. Are you continuing your climbing at that time?
Yes, I had a roommate at the time who was the first one who brought me outside climbing. So definitely got more into it then.
What part of Cali is this?
I was living in the Bay Area, living in San Jose, working up in Fremont.
Okay.
And at that factory, kind of factory job. 75% of the population was Tesla workers. The other 25% was whoever Googled us and found us type thing.
Okay.
And that's when I encountered my first pulley injury and had absolutely no idea what to do with him as a hand therapist.
Interesting. So you're a hand therapist at the time. You encounter this pulley injury.
Mm-hmm.
And like, so this is not something that was common at the time for you.
Not where I was working, no.
Okay.
Working in Denver now, I get them all the time.
Interesting.
But out there, I had heard of them. It was the first time I had seen one. And I was researching how to treat him because I wasn't entirely sure.
So outside of the pulley injuries, was the number one thing you were doing trigger finger?
No. Any diagnoses, shoulder to finger.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. Like, in general, at ballpark, how many type of hand injuries are there?
Oh, so many.
Interesting.
There's different umbrella terms. So repetitive strain injuries, crush injuries, fractures, post-op conditions.
Okay.
Post-surgery.
Interesting.
All kinds of things.
So you were kind of branching out not only from the occupational, like getting there ahead of time aspect, but you were working the like reactive aspect too of like, hey, my hand just got crushed in this injury. I'm going to go to you.
Definitely.
Interesting. Okay. So you encounter the whole pulley thing.
Yes.
Out there. You start some researching and mm-hmm. I mean, did that just like intrigue you?
Yes, it did. To the point I went and got a PhD over it.
Oh. Okay. So I should okay, so Dr. Emily is here. I should
technically,
okay.
Yes.
Well, I mean, hey, technicals matter. Okay. All right, good to know. Dr. Hartnett in the house, everyone. Just let's just, you know, play back to the intro and Dr. Hartnett. All right, cool. Would it be really awkward if I just refer to you as like doctor from now on?
I make my friends call me doctor.
Yes.
It gets confusing as a therapist when I refer them to like a surgeon, like a medical doctor. So normally I just go by Emily, but I do make my friends call me doctor.
You know what? That is awesome. If I had a friend like you, like that would be like, I'm like, man, this person is awesome. Awesome. Okay, so you're out there in Cali. Where are you climbing then? Are you indoors? Your friend took you outdoors somewhere?
Mostly indoors, outdoors on the weekend. Yeah, so okay. I was familiar with like the climbing community and what pulley injuries were, but had never seen one yet professionally.
Okay. And that one that you had encountered out there, was that specifically from climbing?
Yes, he injured his pulley climbing.
Okay. And like, did he know it at the time? Like, are those something that just, it hits immediately, or did he finish climbing and he's like, ooh, you know what? This is kind of building a little bit of pain over time.
It could go either way. In the specific case, he heard an audible pop and knew right away. He was familiar with the injury and knew that he had done it right away.
Okay. And where were you, where was your outdoor climbing out there in the Bay Area?
Yeah, we would go down to like the Santa Cruz area, which is like 40 minutes south of the Bay Area.
Okay.
Area called Castle Rock.
Okay. Santa Cruz climbing. How does it compare to Colorado climbing here?
I like here there's a lot more options, a lot more to do here, a lot more drivable. Out there is also super crowded, so I have to get there super early.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, worse than here.
Okay. I mean, yeah, because if there's just like a fraction of the crags.
Right.
And all the climbers want to be there. That makes sense. Okay. So you're in Cali. How long were you in Cali for?
I lived there exactly a year.
Okay. And then what prompted the move over here?
This climbing injury research stuff really got the best of me. And there wasn't a huge population out there, so the Denver Boulder area made more sense. I was between jobs with COVID, so decided to apply out here instead of there, and found a job here and drove on out.
So you based your occupation kind of specialty off of like, hey, I'm gonna go where there's the most climbers and the most injuries.
Basically, yes. Yeah.
Okay. You're like an ambulance chaser, kind of. All right, cool. So you get over here and are you immediately starting up a business? Are you working with another, like a mentor of type or what?
I did. I was working at another woman's private clinic for about 2 years. And then just recently, about 2 months ago, opened up my own in Denver, and I'm focusing primarily on rock climbers with about 25% of non-rock climbing related injuries.
Interesting. Okay. So you felt at some point under your whole mentorship, you know, you kind of dove into it hard, and you're like, hey, you know what? I'm ready to take on the world solo.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, cool. And we were talking offline. Was that the one down in Boulder?
It was. I was working in Boulder. The woman I was working with is a great mentor for hand-related injuries, but she herself was not a rock climber.
Mm-hmm.
So I was taking all the rock climbing patients within that clinic. And it wasn't, it was probably close to only like 50% in that clinic. I wanted it to be more so based on rock climbing.
Gotcha.
So yeah, finished there and ended up back in Denver.
Okay. Interesting. So you've been doing that. Your new office opened up just a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Where is that located?
It's located in Capitol Hill of Denver.
Cap Hill. Yeah. And just for the people, what is the name of your business?
It's called Hand and Rock Climbing Therapeutic Network. The acronym is HeartNet, which is my last name.
I see what you did there. How long did that come to take up?
It weirdly came to me quickly. I was on a run and it just popped into my head.
That's like a genius idea. Like, oh man, this just works. So, all right, so wait, I kind of want to say it to myself because it's fun. Hand and Rock Climbing Therapeutic Network.
Yes.
I love that.
So HART Network, HeartNet.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay. So you start up the practice, and was everything like, since you started up that practice and you kind of focused on the rock climbing aspect, did your clientele, was everything kind of as expected? Like, you're getting in people and it's like, oh, my whole theory behind rock climbers needing assistance in this sector is absolutely correct. Like, did you just start getting like 99% rock climbers? Or?
So far, pretty much. It's been a lot of word of mouth in the rock climbing community. I did have a couple patients follow me for my last job that aren't rock climbers. Still super fun to treat them.
Yeah.
But yeah, the rock climbing community is definitely growing. The patients I had previously kind of referred by word of mouth. I've advertised in a couple of the local gyms.
Mm-hmm.
My research project that I wrapped up back in April, I got a couple of patients from there.
What kind of project was that?
It was on how to treat pulley injuries while allowing people to climb.
Okay, so climbing through the injury properly.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah. And I mean, what does that look like in terms of, because there's a lot of, I don't know, I feel like that whole aspect of training through something properly is kind of frowned upon a lot of times, just from like the common people. Like, there's this big thing, and I'm against it, just so you know, like the whole like rest, just stop doing everything,
right?
You know, like a lot of people have that reaction just completely, like for anything, and it drives me crazy, you know.
I agree completely.
So you created like your own program for that?
I did, yes. Uh-huh. Okay.
And how did that, like, was that just based off of like just your kind of education and then holding clinics or some sort of focus group? Or
kind of a mix of science, like basic anatomy, mm-hmm. and experience. There's a stretching protocol I have all of my patients do, whether they have a pulley injury or not, which will protect our pulleys over time. It doesn't necessarily help with a current pulley injury. But there's a device I've been making. I have the patent out right now. We're not fully trademarked yet.
Okay.
I make it out of a cotton-infused plastic, so it's soft ish but it has no give. It's a circumferential ring that basically copies the structure of your A2 pulley. You wear it externally only while you're climbing or doing something similar to a crimp grip. And I did a 4-person case series last fall. We had 100% success. I'm currently recruiting for a larger population to redo the same study.
Interesting.
To have more numbers, because obviously 4 isn't very many.
So it's specifically, you said it's for prior, like it's like a prehab type
No,
deal.
Sorry. The prehab is a stretching protocol.
The stretching protocol.
Current injuries, we have this device. It's an orthotic.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah,
so
sorry.
So if someone currently has a pulley injury or something related to that, they pop on this ring-esque device?
Yes.
And is that mitigating the pain, or is that helping the actual recovery?
Both.
Okay.
It's help. So there's a grading system to pulley injuries. This wouldn't work for a grade 4, which is a full rupture. That you would
is that
need
the pop
surgery
that
for.
You were...
Sometimes they pop without a grade 4 involvement. Grade 4 involvement means that a muscle called your lumbrical is involved. So I always test for that to rule it out. It's very rare, in my experience at least. But for the lower grade injuries, 1, 2, and 3, it's a partial tear of sorts. So we just need that structure to re-knit back together. So this ring will apply enough circumferential pressure that allows that structure to not be interrupted in its healing process while allowing people to load their hands while climbing.
Interesting.
So it's pretty tight. That's my biggest complaint. It's hard to get off.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. I mean, is it just like a ring is like a half size too small? Like you've really got to put some olive oil on it?
That's probably a good way to put it. When we climb, our fingers swell, so everyone has an okay time getting it on. But then when we climb, our fingers swell, it's hard to get off. I encourage everyone to wait to take it off till they hike back to their car. I think everyone feels a little vulnerable and nervous when there's something stuck on our fingers.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a safety release on the back. I tell people to break them if they need to, and they just come back and I fix it for them.
Okay, so it's like a one-time break glass in emergency?
Like just in case, we're super nervous, yeah.
Okay, gotcha. Not something to be worn 24/7.
Nope, there isn't a need unless we're loading our hands. So the A2 pulley is stressed the most in a crimp grip. So I tell people to wear them when we're working out. When I'm feeling lazy and tired in the gym, I kind of drop my fist and fold into a crimp grip when I'm getting tired. Same when I do pull-ups. It's kind of what I do naturally.
Okay.
So I encourage people to wear it then. I had one lady who was moving. I encouraged her to wear it then just in case she was to grab anything in a hook grip. But if we're not using our hand in that position, there's no need to wear it otherwise.
Interesting. So you were saying before, outside of that, you have your stretching protocols, which is the prehab aspect.
Yes.
Being, how do we prevent these things? I'm a big fan of, like, I love training. I love training. I love preventing injury and everything. Even someone who's in the fitness world, per se, such as me, like, I gotta say, I never, like, stretch my hands. And that's what you're talking about. I take it, like, specific little finger.
Oh yeah, I have a handout. I give it to almost everyone.
What does the basis of that stretching look like? I mean, is it just like 1-2, 1-2, all right, ready to go, or?
I'm trying to think how to explain it. Usually, I just show people. Yeah.
Okay.
So you make a hook grip.
Okay.
And hyperextend your metacarpal, which is what we usually refer to as our knuckle, I think.
Okay.
Hyperextend meaning bringing it backwards, and then we're going to use our other hand to bring it backwards even more. And drop our adjacent fingers into a fist.
Okay.
You should feel the stretch in between your fingers. So right now I'm stretching my index finger and I feel it between my index and my middle finger. That's stretching something called our intrinsic muscles, which, do you want me to explain how it's related?
Sure.
Hopefully?
Yeah.
If you're familiar with our pulley system, we have 5 circumferential annular pulleys in our finger. What they're doing is keeping our long flexor tendon attached to our index finger when we move our hand. So when I make a fist, my index finger is staying close to my bone. It's not coming down into my palm. That's the pulley's job. The A2 pulley is located right above our knuckle and is the most injured during climbing. So what that's going to do is keep that flexor tendon close to our bone. There's something called tendon phalanx distance, tendon being the end of that muscle, phalanx being the name of the bone. Climbers have been documented to have 6 times as much space in that tendon phalanx distance as non-climbing humans, which is considered a repetitive strain injury.
So is that inherently a bad thing?
It's
like,
not.
If I didn't incur an injury yet, but I have that extra space, is that good? Is that bad? Does it not matter?
I wouldn't necessarily say it's bad. It is going to lead us more prone to injury over time, definitely. Yeah, so stretching those intrinsic muscles, that intrinsic muscle, we have a couple of them. We have our interossei and our lumbricals. Our lumbricals are going to attach to that long tendon. So if I can stretch out my lumbrical, it's going to give a little bit more flexibility to my long tendon and my short tendons, which is going to put less stress on the pulley over time.
Interesting. Okay.
So we'll slow down how fast we are increasing that tendon phalanx distance.
Okay.
If we have a very large tendon phalanx distance and have a quick dynamic hold, we are going to tear that pulley.
Very cool. It's pretty amazing, like, seeing how, I wasn't expecting how specific that stretch would be. So you do the one, and then I take it you move on to the next.
You
and
do
then
all
you
your
move
fingers.
On to the next, and you move on to the next. Okay.
Yes.
Interesting.
I do it so often because it's my job. Mine go all the way back now, which I have yet to have a pulley injury, knock on wood.
Okay. And so, correct me if I'm wrong, the people who you put on that prehab, they have significantly less injuries moving forward.
That's the hope. That's also an ongoing project. I just started recruitment for that one in February.
Okay.
It's going to be a year-long project. So far, so good. I'm contacting those people once a month. So far, none of them have a pulley injury.
Nice. And these are regular climbers.
Yes. To be involved in the study, they had to climb on average 3 days a week.
Nice. Very cool. So you've got these specific type of stretch protocols and everything. How long does that thing that you developed, that whole protocol, how long does that take a person to get through the whole thing? Is this a 5-minute process? Does the whole thing involve like a 30-minute finger stretch process before climbing? How does that work?
Personally, it takes me 8 minutes. I did send out a Survey Monkey for my patients. The average answer was 10 minutes.
Okay. So 10 minutes of finger specific.
Yes. Uh-huh. Finger and forearm, which okay. just basic forearm stretches. Those are easier.
Okay. And is there also a link between, like, is there a link between weak forearms and the connection to the fingers, or are these totally independent?
Somewhat in the middle. Those intrinsic muscles are what we are targeting with the first stretch that I explained. Mm-hmm. But as I said, that little muscle attaches to our really long muscle. Our long muscle starts in our elbow and goes to the end of our fingers. So those forearm stretches will include him. So kind of complementing each other.
Very cool. Okay. So you have your current people, and I take it probably your whole climbing network that you currently climb with. Have you kind of sold them on like, hey, listen guys, if you guys don't want to get pulley injuries, let's actually do this. And have people been pretty receptive towards doing these things?
Definitely. I do make all of my friends do it with me before we climb. Yeah. They seem receptive to it.
The doctor is forcing her friends. Guys, before we climb, we will be spending the next 8 minutes.
So far, they're nice to me about it. I do make us all stand in a circle. They do get mad when I count out loud, so I've counted quietly.
See, I love that. See, I love the whole, like just from like the prior military, like, one, repeat, two, two, three, three. I love that whole, like, little teamwork type thing. Very cool. So, what type of climbing are you kind of doing now, mostly? Are you more so on the indoor scene? Are you on the outdoor scene, or a mix?
I prefer to be more outdoor, mm-hmm. just because of time now. I've been indoor mostly.
Okay.
Would love to get back outdoor.
Nice. Where have you been climbing outdoor here in Colorado so far?
I really like Staunton State Park. Nice. I've been going to Boulder Canyon this summer. It's a little bit mm-hmm. closer. I'm excited that they just opened a new parking lot in Staunton, though.
Yes.
We'll be going this weekend to finally check it out.
That is the talk of the town.
Yeah.
Yes. Very cool. And what are you doing? Are you doing, I take it when you're in Boulder Canyon, you're living the sport life, hardcore?
Sport life, yes.
Okay, I got you. Have you jumped in the trad world yet? Is there any intrigue?
Barely. I've started placing gear on bolted routes.
Nice.
It's going fine so far.
That's perfect training. Perfect training. Awesome. And so when you're kind of diagnosing your people for this, what was it, class one, class two? Is it class or grade?
Grade. Right. I think they can be used interchangeably.
When you're kind of diagnosing that, is that something that you can, like, someone comes in, they're like, hey, doc, listen, you know, I just finished up a climbing session. My hand's killing me. Can you just, like, have them, like, move it a little bit and be like, that's grade two, that's grade three? Or is this, like, x-ray required?
There is no x-ray required. It's probably a 5 to 10 minute process. There's different tests that we've developed over time. Mm-hmm. Most of them are grip testing. So I test them in a fist and a crimp grip. In the hand world, we call it intrinsic minus. I test the individual finger versus the individual finger on the opposite hand, and then also measure for swelling.
Okay, so the differential between those would indicate whatever type of injury.
Exactly.
Interesting.
I have them, so when we have a pulley injury, that finger isn't loading as much as it should be. So there is usually a 75% or more difference in strength. So I have them stand on a hangboard.
75%?
Usually, especially if it's in our smaller two fingers. It's a pretty big difference. I have them stand on a hangboard and we offload to see what the weight differential is. Usually when we put the ring on, it goes up right away, the strength, when I put the protective device on. Once that device is on, if the strength goes up to within 20% of the opposite hand, I consider it a grade one or a grade two injury, since that strength comes back immediately with the extra protection. If there's less than that in weight return, or strength return rather, it's likely a grade three or four. To rule out a four, I take a manual muscle test, it's called MMT, of the lumbricals. If there is pain or weakness or the finger involved removes itself from the test, which looks like this, I would refer them for imaging, which would be either an MRI or an imaging ultrasound.
Okay.
To rule out a grade 4, because I know that I can't treat a grade 4. They would just be wearing this ring for 12 weeks with no results.
Okay. So grade 4 is the highest, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So at grade 4, is that basically like invasive surgery is required?
Yes. To my knowledge, yes.
So the pulley is just completely, is it like someone just took an axe and chopped it?
Pretty much. It's completely separated, completely torn.
Interesting. Okay.
I've only had one client so far that I wasn't sure if he was a grade 3 or 4. I did send him for imaging and it was only a grade 3. Okay. I have yet to encounter a grade 4, which is good.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, so how is it that, so what's the most common grade that your everyday climber is encountering?
One or two, very or low two. So far. Okay. Mm-hmm. Everyone in my previous study was a one or two. And then the current one, I think I only have 11 people so far, but they're all one or two.
And so how is that, you know, just getting into the meat and potatoes, how are climbers incurring these pulley injuries? Because I've heard about, just from being on like the social media scene and forums and stuff, you know, you're cruising around Mountain Project and everyone's like, oh man, you know, I got to take time off. I got this pulley injury. How are these pulley injuries happening? What is it that climbers are doing wrong? Or what are they deficient in that these pulley injuries are occurring in them?
Almost every time the story is, it's the last ride of the day, they felt tired, they almost didn't do it and decided to try anyway. I think you've probably heard before with skiing, never say it's your last run of the day.
Interesting. Okay. Actually, I haven't heard that. Wait, what is it again?
Never say it's your last run of the day when you're skiing. That's when people get hurt. Mm. I feel the same way with climbing. When we're tired okay. and we're like, let's just do one more route before we go. We're all the way out here. I think almost every patient I've had, that was the story. It was their last route of the day. So we're tired, our hands are tired, we're pumped a little. And then it's almost always a heavy crimp. So someone's trying to leap to something else or we're about to fall and crimping really hard. We're tired, so we're just kind of flinging our hand up there.
Mm. Does it happen more so on the whole, like, dynamic load aspect?
Yes.
Like, I've got to get that. I do either a hard dyno or a dead point, and my load goes from 0 to 100 in a second.
Exactly.
And is that what, that catch?
Exactly. That's almost always it.
Okay.
And always in a crimp.
Okay. And for the most part, you said that is happening specifically due to the fatigue aspect. So I'm good if I do those things at the start of my session, but once these, is it the metatarsals that are, well, that's the bone, right?
Yeah, metacarpal.
Okay. So the pulley itself, the pulleys, they're getting fatigued, and eventually at the end of the day, they just can't handle that load.
Super close. So it's actually the tendon. So pulley is a ligament, whereas tendon is what connects muscle to bone.
Okay.
So it's our tendons that are yanking on those pulleys. Mm. So it's just too much force on the pulleys.
Interesting.
So tendon is tired, lots of blood flow.
So the tendons are supposed to be always taking up the load, but when they fatigue, they have to transfer the load to the pulleys, and that's not good.
Basically, yes.
Interesting. Okay. So in general, I mean, how can we make the tendon specifically stronger? Is that just from, because whenever I think of like strength or endurance training from the rock climbing aspect, I'm immediately thinking about forearm stuff. Like I'm always thinking forearm stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Farmers carries, deadlifts, pull-ups, you know, things like that. Is this where you would recommend just finger-specific exercises and that would increase can we increase tendon endurance?
Can increase endurance. I'm a big proponent for stretching. As I mentioned earlier, those intrinsic stretches
mm-hmm.
Will kind of help that dynamic relationship between the ligament and the tendon, the flexor tendon and the pulley.
Okay.
In terms of strengthening, climbing itself is going to be a grip strengthening activity.
Okay.
When we over-strengthen our hands is when I see a tendonitis injury, just because it's too much. What I usually have people do is I test their strength again on that hangboard protocol. Mm-hmm. If it's lower than what it should be for various criteria, experience, age, body weight, then I would give them a strengthening protocol, but I only have them do it for up to 3 weeks and then we test again.
Okay.
If their strength is going up, at a somewhat normal rate, I'll have them keep doing it. But once their strength is where it should be, anatomically, I have them stop that strengthening protocol and just continue climbing.
Okay. So there's a place where it should be, and you're trying not to push it too far to where it's like, if we get you a little bit stronger, you're probably going to start feeling those signs of tendonitis.
Exactly.
Okay.
From the beginning of our wrist to our fingers, we're mostly tendon. There's not much mass in here to strengthen.
Mm-hmm.
The muscles inside of our hands are so tiny that that muscle mass isn't really going to increase or matter.
Okay.
So if we overwork tendons, which we would be doing by strengthening our grip, mm-hmm. We're going to develop that tendonitis, which is why we try to keep it to that 21-day protocol.
Okay, gotcha. So from an average climber's standpoint, how often should they be doing these? I mean, obviously the stretching I can see as being every day.
Yes.
Is that correct? Okay. How often should we be doing our strengthening where we're not going to incur some of those injuries, but we want to avoid the hand injuries that you were talking about?
For my clients, I have them strengthen on off days of climbing.
Okay.
So let's say you're climbing Sunday, Monday, Friday, Saturday. You mm-hmm. would be strengthening those in between days. That Tuesday, Wednesday, Sunday. I also have them stop immediately if we have pain, and they just text me. And then at that 3 weeks, we rechecked. I check for any signs of tendonitis, and then I check that their strength is actually increasing.
Mm-hmm.
And once it's back at that base point, I instruct them to stop the strengthening protocols. Okay. I do, an exception would be if a climber is going away for a couple weeks, they won't be climbing, then mm-hmm. I think it's totally fine to strengthen our hands.
Okay.
It's when we strengthen our hands in addition to climbing that I'm seeing that tendonitis. It would be like going to the gym and doing leg day every single day.
Right.
We're going to get fatigued and pain, not necessarily increase that muscle mass as we're expecting to.
So how do you personally recommend for your climbers in terms of, do you get into, because I kind of see you as like a trainer to some degree, because you know it seems like you have a lot of these preventative measures kind of in your personal ethos and everything. Are you making recommendations in terms of, you're going to go out and climb, I would love it if you would focus 30% on super crimpy routes and 40% on, you know, overhung jug routes? Do you kind of try and steer people in that direction so they don't overcrimp?
I definitely do. I tell people to kind of switch up with their climbing. If we did something really crimp heavy, to go to something super sloper heavy after. Repetitive strain can definitely happen in climbing if we're projecting something and trying it over and over again, and it's requiring like 75% crimping.
Okay.
That's when we're going to start to see tendonitis and pulley injuries, and just pain from doing the same thing over and over.
So the second that we start as climbers, the second we start finish up a route and start feeling like, ooh, you know, there's a little bit of soreness in general, is that kind of a good indicator that that was probably my last route? Or is that something that maybe we can push a little bit further? Or how do you recommend gauging that? Like, when should we go home? Like, when is it enough? You know?
I have two phrases I think all of my friends and clients are sick of hearing. The first one is hurt versus harm. Hurt being something is painful, but it's because I just worked really hard, and a couple hours when I wake up in the morning, it's going to be gone. Harm is I really overdid it. I could have torn something. I could have caused something to inflame. It's hard to find where that line is. It's a very fine line. The way I encourage people to find it is when you feel that post-workout soreness in the gym or wherever you're climbing, give it a number on the pain scale, 1 to 10. Everyone's number is going to be different. For me personally, it's a 2. When I'm at that 2 out of 10 pain while I'm working out, that's when I know when to stop. That's when I know I'm about to hit that harm instead of that hurt. So whatever your number is, I encourage you not to go above it.
Okay, interesting. A lot of times, I think a very common expression in the gym is like, you know, oh, dude, you know, I'm feeling the pump. You know, like our forearms are just absolutely jacked. And you know, let me know if this is crazy, but like a lot of times when I'm climbing, not only do I feel the pump, but I feel that point when I was, especially on like a super crimpy route or something, and I hate crimpy routes. I really do. I'm such a overhang person. I love to power through the big jugs upside down. You know, I feel like Adam Andra on like that, that 515 silence route. You know, just like, I love to grab the big things, but sometimes I'm on those super you know, crimpy routes, totally vertical, standing on little just nubs and everything. But not only do I feel the forearm pump, but I feel that point to where I can hardly engage fingers anymore. Like, literally, I feel like if someone were to give me, like, a cell phone to hold, I would hardly be able to.
That's going
to
be our 2 out of 10. So the other way I get people, especially those, sounds like you, like really intense climbers, maybe you don't feel pain at all until later.
Pretty much.
2 different tests, supination, so bringing your palm towards the ceiling. When I'm super pumped.
Wait, all right, so supination, for those who don't know, is going to be palm facing towards the ceiling.
Yes, basically rotating our forearm so that our palm is facing the ceiling and our palm side forearm is up. When I'm really pumped, I can't go this far. This is probably about 80 degrees of range of motion. When I'm super pumped, I start to get uncomfortable and shaky at about 50 degrees.
Oh, so you're talking about the rotation.
The range of motion. Yes.
Oh, okay. So, all right. So ideally, we want to be kind of like, I feel like I'm holding like a...
Like a bowl of soup.
A bowl of soup. All right. So this is ideal.
Yes.
This is like perfect.
Yep.
Good. So
when you're pumped, you're going to notice you would spill that bowl of soup.
Okay. That can't, if I had a full bowl of soup, that can't where my thumb goes closer to the ceiling, I guess. 45 degrees, let's say. I don't know. Like, this would not be good.
Right. And if you can't force yourself to actively go further, that's going to be a sign to stop.
Okay.
I tell people to check this range of motion and then also their hook fist range of motion. When I'm pumped right now, I can touch the tips of my fingers to the beginning of my finger on the palm side.
Are you talking about with your thumb?
Nope, with my index through pinky.
Okay, so touching your...
Like if you make a hook
fingertips.
Fist. Yes.
With the... where
your
calluses are?
It's called your proximal phalanx. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Okay.
Google like image proximal phalanx.
See, I feel so stupid talking to a doctor because I...
I feel stupid because I don't know how to explain this without like visuals.
All right, so touching the fingertips to where your calluses form.
Yes. When we're pumped and tired, we stick out here. We can't reach all the way.
Okay.
So yeah, look at that next time you're climbing.
So my fingers are floating, basically not able to touch the actual hand.
Yes.
This is not good.
Correct. You're too tired. That's when we're going to put ourselves at risk for injury. Mm. If I try to force myself to close and I'm getting approaching that 2 out of 10 pain, that's another sign to stop. Or even just take a break. I would start implementing those stretches at that point. If those stretches don't make it any better, I still can't close and still can't flip my hand. It's probably time to go home.
Okay, I got you. And what has people's feedback been from before they met you and jumped on some sort of plan or the advice that you've given them? Have they just been absolutely stoked that like, hey, doc, listen, I'm climbing like a beast now. I used to get injured all the time and now I can just go. Have you gotten like just awesome feedback?
I have. Yeah. So far, so good. I think it's a good sign. Everyone's referring their friends. It's great for business and also makes me feel like I did.
Yeah.
I mean, help them.
You have a very altruistic career in that regard. As a climber, like as a climber first and foremost is how I consider myself. It like that, I love people, especially in your type of occupation, that can allow me to do the things that I love doing longer.
Definitely. Right. The point of my first PhD project was to avoid something called occupational deprivation. So what was happening before, people got pulley injuries and were taking like 2 to 3 months off of climbing.
Oh, that sucks.
What do you do in those 2 to 3 months? Some people, climbing is a form of income or it's a hobby, it's social participation. So we're losing all of those aspects by asking people not to climb for those 2 to 3 months. So if we can, the whole point of all this research is to see if we can avoid that.
And do you see your colleagues who are in the occupational therapy field, such as yourself, is that kind of a common, I don't even know what to call it, kind of misinformation that they have learned? Or is that common advice in your field? Outside of your specialty of knowing how to actually address and attack this major issue within the climbing community?
I think in terms of climbing, it's definitely a major issue. Climbing is a very niche sport. It was just included in the Olympics for the first time, so it is increasing in popularity. Before this, there was no real protocol for pulley injuries. Mm-hmm. The protocol for tendonitis, there's a lot of stuff out there for tennis elbow and golfer's elbow that's just completely inaccurate. And it's not on purpose. It's due to a lack of education and a lack of people understanding the climbing community and the unique injuries. As climbers, we use our hands differently than the typical population. It's like the pulley rings. I tell people only to use them when they're doing something in a crimp grip. We're not doing anything in a crimp grip except for crimping. If a non-climbing human tore a pulley somehow, their A2 pulley, they would never know until they tried to crimp something.
Oh, really?
Just because we can't recreate that pain without crimping. So it's super under-researched.
Yeah, I mean, when would a regular... I like how you used a regular human. We're such superior humans. So that is interesting to think about because you're right. It's not something that a regular human... It's not a function of us.
Right, exactly. Like, same with tennis elbow. People get it, it's called tennis elbow. People get it from other sports, other activities. A lot of people can just rest that arm for 2 to 3 weeks and it kind of goes away. As climbers, we need both of our arms. Right. So the protocols for tennis elbow, I don't agree with a lot of them. There's a lot that I like, a lot that I don't.
And that's been pushed in your field from professionals such as yourself. And would you say that the majority of other kind of people in your field are actually saying, hey, just stay off it?
I think that previously, definitely, that's kind of what we learned in school. Mm-hmm. I graduated 4 years ago, I think. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what we learned in school, but now it seems to be shifting to kind of more occupation-specific protocols. People are encouraging research on rock climbing-only injuries. There's a lot of research for like new mothers, kind of like when our hobbies change, when our lifestyles change, like what do we do? So it's not just climbing. It's definitely happening in other communities, which is really good. But it does seem to be that conservative medicine is kind of shifting to occupation specific, which is great.
Very interesting. What are your, this is just kind of totally random, but what are your thoughts on what Tommy Caldwell did?
His amputation?
Yeah, in terms of his, I guess, compensating now with four fingers. Like, is that just ridiculous? Like, from an anatomical standpoint, do you, as someone who understands the hand so well, is that just, like, more amazing than even, like, the rest of us could understand?
It's kind of mind-blowing, to be honest. I've, like, fast-forwarded to that part in his movie and, like, paused it and watched it really slow. He's using that lumbrical muscle we were talking about in a fascinating manner.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is amazing the way he did relearn to use his hand.
What is, when it comes to... when we do, like, let's say a standard crimp, I'll use that term, just something that I've always wondered, is there a finger specifically that is doing most of the work when it comes to, like, being able to hook here and hold body weight?
Surprisingly, it's, in my experience, in my belief, it's the ring finger. So our ring and pinky finger are 60% of our grip strength.
Okay. Really?
Yeah, and I should have brought my dynamometer. I could have showed you.
Wait, what is it?
Tool that measures your grip strength.
And is that just a squeeze thing?
Yep, yeah, you just squeeze it and it tells me how many pounds you're squeezing.
Oh, cool. What is the human, or like, does it go male, female average? Or?
It does. Age averages and male, human, male, female, male, female averages also goes by age. Okay. I've made up my own averages for climbers. You're all significantly stronger with your grips.
Let's say we'll use let's say a 30-year-old male climber, or just whatever age you have already kind of researched. What is the differential between the climber and the regular human?
So I haven't done formal research, but in my humble opinion, the male average for a 30-year-old is 65 pounds, I believe. Climbers, I'd be surprised if they were below 85.
Really? Okay. And that's just across the board, like...
So far, yes.
Very cool. That's interesting. Yeah. So you have a lot of these... you do a lot of type of diagnostic assessments and everything.
I do.
When you're having people come in.
Mm-hmm.
Are a lot of people coming in specifically for that prehab aspect that you were talking about? Like, hey, listen, I definitely don't want to get injured in the future. What can I be on a training plan? Do people come to you for that?
Recently, that's been what's happening with recruitment for this pulley injury study. A lot of these pulley injuries are coming in, and I'm telling them they can prevent it on other fingers, so they're rushing home and telling their friends not to get the same injury they have.
Awesome.
So recently, there has been an influx of preventative patients, I guess.
I love to see that preventative mindset, and it's... I mean, as I'm sure you know, it's so rare in the medical/health industry. You know, and this is just kind of like an American thing, we're so reactive. We're so like, and climbers, and actually I should say athletes, are so focused on, I need to get better, I need to get better, I need to climb more, which is great. I have that mindset too. Often though, at the cost of, I am going to push through the pain, I am going to, you know, climb through this or run through this or whatever sport, and I'll go see a professional when I'm hurt. I'll save it till then, you know? And so it's just very refreshing to see someone who has the focus of prehab, you know, stopping that injury from occurring and not relying on rehab like we always do,
right,
in the industry.
I agree, definitely. Yeah.
So what is next for, wait, I have to look at the company name, because I love saying it, Hand and Rock Climbing Therapeutic Network. What is next for you? I mean, you're pretty new, or your setup is pretty new. Where are you looking to take the industry? Because it seems like, just from talking to you, that you kind of have a very, you know, you have like a more of a revolutionary approach to, I want to come and rock the world of occupational therapy. And you're bringing a lot of new school information and philosophy, I feel like. So definitely. What is next for you guys?
I definitely want to continue with the hands-on clinic piece, but use my patients as my research participants. So our current projects are, again, making that first one larger, bigger population for that pulley injury device. My next couple of projects include grip strengthening. A lot of people come in and ask me how to increase their grip strength, and most of them don't need their grip strength increased. When they're feeling weak is when they're feeling tired. Continuing, I'm just starting research on that. A lot of it is subjective right now, is like why we think that way. Definitely continuing that clinical piece combined with that research piece to kind of increase the knowledge that we have on rock climbers' injuries, since it is so limited currently.
Going back to the training piece, that's interesting that you said that. Do you feel like that's a common misconception for climbers? Because, like, I think I kind of have it too, so, you know, you can clear the air here. Is that a common thing for climbers to think, like, the reason why I'm not climbing 514 yet is because of my grip strength?
Definitely a misconception. I think we need to emphasize the difference between strength and endurance. So what this new project looks like is taking someone's crimp strength and grip strength before they climb, and then when they're done, taking it again. The difference is pretty profound. I only have 4 participants right now, and the average is somewhere between 30 and 40 pound difference.
Okay.
So we're not weaker 3 hours later, we're tired 3 hours later.
Interesting.
So we need to increase our endurance, not necessarily increase our static grip strength.
And endurance, and when you say climbing endurance, you're talking about our ability to maintain our current strength for longer?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. And is that something like more hangboarding and along with the other protocols that you have in place?
Yes.
People should be doing that, right?
Yes, a little bit more warming up. I think my friends are a little irritated with me how much I ask them to warm up with me first.
Okay.
I think warm up routes, that stretching protocol, I think that definitely helps us kind of build that endurance piece.
You were mentioning before that you're a proponent of climbing more will naturally bring up the grip strength.
Yes.
But at the same time, that also has the inherent danger of getting that fatigue, that tendon fatigue,
yes,
that you're talking about. So do those warm-ups, are those like safer without the detriment of the whole tendon thing, but you can still get the strength?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that if we climb lower longer, that builds endurance. So send level and below for like the first half hour.
What is it? What level?
Ascend level and below. So if we're
we're
projecting something, we're not starting on that project. We're doing one warm up route and then
gotcha. And
then projecting.
I'll be honest, I'm someone who often makes the foolish mistake, and like I feel like in my mind I know it's a stupid idea, but in my mind I tell myself, all right, I've got this project I want to hit today. I've got to crush it. But I don't want to make myself tired. So I might do like a little like band warm up or something.
Uh-huh.
And then, all right, I'm ready to go. And I'll immediately want to jump on that. But from what you're saying, it makes so much sense that I'm not going to lose strength. I'm going to lose my endurance as I'm going up this wall.
Right. I have one patient, I've known him for probably 6 months now. He just came in, it was today actually, he just came in and he was like, you know what, I warmed up, you may have been right. I was like, it took you 6 months to get there, but I appreciate it. So it does work, I think, in my opinion. Having this research will be good when we wrap it up. We're not wrapped up till December, but...
And then where is that? Are you going to do some sort of publication or... I mean, because it seems like I haven't heard anything else. I like to think that I'm, like, plugged into the network. I haven't heard anyone else doing those type of studies. Where are you going to push that knowledge? How are other people going to kind of pick up those gems?
Right now, it's being published in a hand therapy magazine, and I'm presenting at a hand therapy conference. It's still very much in the medical world. I'm trying to bring it into the climbing world. Mm-hmm. I've submitted to Rock and Ice and Rock Climbing Magazine just recently. I haven't heard back from them quite yet. So right now, just things like this, word of mouth. Yeah. I want it in the medical field, but also want to kind of bring it back to the rock climbing community, definitely.
You know what? That's such, I feel like it's such an important thing. I kind of giggled a little bit when you said like
hand therapy conference.
The hand therapy
conference. I'm very excited.
It's like, oh, hey, what are you doing over the weekend? I got this hand conference. Just a bunch of the hand people from across the nation are going to be coming into one. I'm trying to think what that looks like.
My roommate was like, are you guys just having like thumb wars? Like, what do you guys do?
That's awesome. I'm imagining like you have to put on like a hello, my name is tag, and then like there's like a hand sticker that goes on the other side of your chest.
We better get a hand sticker.
Yes. That's awesome. So you're going to be doing some publications. It's going to be in that magazine the hand therapy.
Yeah, both the magazine and the conference journal. So far. A journal, yeah.
Journal
of hand therapy is what it's called.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, and do you happen to have like, do you have any type of websites or anything like that that you're able to publish that to? Because for the average person, even, you know, like me, it's like, I don't know where to get that.
Right, definitely.
That, like, so if one wanted to read this in the future,
right,
where would one go?
Right now it's on my website, which is heart-net.com.
So HART-NETT.com?
Yes. Uh-huh.
You got that? Wow, that's actually...
Right? I tried for just HeartNet. It wasn't available.
No, that's actually still a good get. Heart-NET.com.
Yep, exactly. Okay. And I have that on Instagram right now.
Okay. And what do you... what else is on your website? Is that your company website specifically?
Yes. Yeah, that's my business. It's typically just how to contact me for an appointment. Okay. Information about pulley injuries, a simplified version of the project I did as my PhD capstone.
Okay.
That simplified version I'm starting to present at rock climbing gyms also. I'll be at Denver Boulder Company in a couple of weeks. I'm hoping to reach just general climbers that.
So you're going to do a little kind of get together, a little knowledge thing?
And, mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's going to be like one of those things that people can just show up for? And
yeah, I think any gym member.
Nice.
I'm not sure. I should ask them if anyone can come in. I should ask that. I haven't yet.
Yeah, that's because that's pretty awesome. That's why, like, you know, some of the like outdoor companies and stuff, I love when they do like just little workshops little workshops and everything. And it's like that, it's such invaluable information because, like I said, I don't know any other hand therapist. So it's cool to have that type of connection and be like, hey, listen, Emily, I'm feeling this injury, you know, what should I do and everything. And just being able to have someone who specializes in such a niche field, that's awesome. And then for your own self, do you specifically like limit your type of climbing, or are you very cognizant about what you're doing with your hands when you're out there? Are you kind of keeping a journal of like, all right, I've done six crimps today, so I better shut it down?
I should keep a journal. No, I don't. I do pay a lot of attention. I call it soup and pencil, what we were talking about before.
Okay.
If I can still hold a bowl of soup, and if I had a pencil in my crimp grip, could someone rip it out? I do pay a lot of attention to that. I do religiously stretch. I've noticed I kind of do them absentmindedly. So my fingers are very stretched out.
Awesome.
So definitely do uphold what I practice, what I preach. Yeah.
So just, you know, for the people listening who really want to, you know, maximize their performance and minimize the injury ratio, would you, like, what would your best advice be for people who... are just kind of, like myself, kind of ignorant towards this type of thing, would you just tell them to stretch, do some hangboard, or what's your best advice for your average climber?
I'm definitely stretching is my favorite thing. Stretching, listening to our body when we're at that fatigue level, not doing one more route. Identifying when we're above, for me again, that 2 out of 10 pain. Definitely warming up.
Nice. Okay. And just to recap, I want to make sure that people know exactly where to reach you. So your place, you're in Denver.
Yes. Yep.
And you've got your place is in Denver proper. Hand and Rock Climbing Therapeutic Network. Can people find that on Google?
If you Google me, my website should come up.
Okay.
I am on Maps. It's 899 North Logan Street in Denver.
Okay. Very, very cool. And appointment, walk-in?
Usually by appointment. If you text me that day, I can usually fit people in.
Okay.
Yeah, you could walk in. You might be waiting a minute, but yeah, feel free. Go for it.
I got you. How many people are working over there? Is it just you solo, or do you have a team now?
Right now, it's just me. I'm space sharing with another woman, so we share the suite, but we both have our own offices. Ideally, I'll hire someone in the next year or so if we continue to grow. It'd be cool to have a physical therapist to complement the hand therapy.
What would the... Okay, so the difference being just focusing on other parts of the body?
Exactly, yeah. Okay. Someone with the same kind of research love that wants to do other parts of the body. Someone today asked me about an ankle, and I was like,
Right, look at the sign.
I was like, let's Google it together.
Yeah. But you do also kind of, so forearm down.
Shoulder down, yeah.
Oh, shoulder down,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, anything rotator cuff to fingers.
I gotcha. Because there is a connection throughout that whole piece, correct?
Definitely.
If when I move my finger and I feel shoulder pain, it's like, ooh, maybe I should.
That wouldn't be good, yeah.
Do people come in with shoulder injuries too from climbing?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And what are those? Would that be rotator cuff injuries?
Mostly rotator cuff. I have a couple post-op. I have an AC separation post-surgical patient right now. Bicep repair. Everyone else is rotator cuff, I believe.
Oh, an actual torn bicep?
Yes, he had a repair back in end of May, I think.
I used to power lift a lot, and that was probably the biggest nightmare of an injury. That's just
That is one. When you have surgery, you do have to rest, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you're not. You know, that's that audible pop.
Definitely
jumps up there. Do you see a lot of that in the climbing community? I haven't.
Bicep, not necessarily. Okay. This man is a climber, but he did injure it lifting, climbing. The AC joint separation, I think he fell off a skateboard or a snowboard, also not climbing, but a competitive climber. So now with him, with his protocol, we're at week 14 since surgery, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're getting him back to climb. And he's noticing like major weakness between his surgery shoulder and his opposite shoulder.
Okay.
So kind of balancing that and getting him back to climbing without causing any form of tendonitis. If it were up to him, I think he would just sit in a gym all day and strengthen everything. So most of what I'm doing is telling him to
just
stop.
That warrior mindset. Love it. Do you, you know, speaking of like someone like that, you know, you were mentioning that you get a lot of these post-op people. Would you say that there's a big disconnect with the surgical side of the house and them bridging the gap with, okay, congrats, your surgery is over, what's next? Does the surgical community connect with you guys well, who's more so on the rehab specific side of the house, or do a lot of your people just randomly stumble upon you?
I'd say 50%. In my experience, there's two surgeons I love. It's Dr. De La Rosa in Denver and Dr. Rog in Boulder. The two of them are definitely big. They are big fans of hand therapy. They'll send me people and just say, like, you know, like, see if they need you or not.
Right.
When people mention they're a rock climber, they realize that that's occupation-based and we'll send them to an OT right away. It's the older hand surgeons I'm seeing a bit more of a disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a couple I've called and told them like hey, like I had this patient, he Googled me, his friend sent him here, I'm gonna do this with them, is that okay? And once I explain who I am and what I'm doing, they're like, oh yeah, that's fine.
Patients,
yes,
from,
yeah,
the surgery,
definitely. Okay. I think just those older doctors and that older medical mindset,
sure.
It's changing now, but changing for people my age, changing, yeah, for my generation. But no one has told me no. None of those older hand surgeons have said no. They've said go for it once I explained what the purpose was.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're in a field, you know, the medical field and many other fields where the knowledge is improving every single day.
Definitely.
You know, and even yourself, you yourself are a pioneer of pushing that knowledge, because you're gonna push this project out that you're working on now. It's going to get submitted internally more so to these journals and everything, and people are going to read it. Current students are going to be reading your work, you
definitely
know, which is awesome.
Hopefully.
And it's cool that you put the work in to do these niche projects, because for, I mean, even the rock climbing community, as many of us as there are in Colorado, we're still a niche community in general. We're a niche population compared to the average human,
right.
You know, you know, so it's just cool that you're a part of pushing that and being like, you know, knowledge has changed. There's more information out there. And how are we going to push that to better people? Because like I said, I want to be climbing forever. And I was recently climbing outdoors, and I came across this this very old couple climbing.
Awesome.
They were up there like 70s and stuff. And
whoa.
How often do we see you know, anyone in that age range, how often do we see them kind of immobilized by arthritis?
Right.
You know, and everything, and like people who can't pick up a coffee mug or anything like that. And I hate to see that. And it seems like your treatments are able to stop that.
I'm hoping so. Yeah. It would be interesting, now that you mention arthritis, to work with an older population as a future research project.
Do you ever get like younger people with arthritis? Like, can climbing and stuff, all that hand use, can that make arthritis or just tendonitis? I don't know what the difference
mostly
is.
So itis, right, means inflammation. So arthritis, arth is bone, it's a joint. So inflammation in our joint is going to be arthritis. Whereas tendonitis is the end of a muscle. It connects our muscle to a bone.
Okay.
So that's going to be the tendonitis, inflammation in that tendon.
Gotcha. So the more so repetitive climbing creates tendonitis, not so much arthritis?
Usually, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, the repetitiveness will affect our tendons.
Gotcha. Are there any type of supplements that you recommend for people to avoid this inflammation within the hand? Any supplements you would recommend? Or
I get that all the time. I actually have a meeting with a nutritionist on Friday to better answer that question.
Okay.
From what I've been reading, I agree with the research I'm seeing out on collagen right now, but I personally don't have much experience with that kind of thing. So hopefully I'll talk to Hannah on Friday and have a better answer for you, or send her your way.
So you've been staying pretty natural your whole life, or especially
yeah.
your climbing mm-hmm. career?
Yes.
Just hydration and...
Pretty much, yeah.
And correct me if I'm wrong, does hydration mitigate
inflammation?
so many fancy doctor terms. I don't talk to people like you often in terms of that.
Sometimes I forget to change my language.
Like I'm really tapping into, like, I'm an idiot. I'm really tapping
no,
into like
not
max
at all.
Level vocab right now.
Not at
but,
all.
Water is gonna be something that helps out mitigating tendonitis, correct?
Yes, okay. In the way that our lymphatic system relies on active movement and fluid intake to operate. So that lymphatic system is going to help flush out any inflammation. So drinking water is great.
Okay, I gotcha. All right, so, and after, let's say someone climbs, we finish up climbing and we're just aching. Drink water, Advil? Is that an anti-inflammatory?
I think it is.
All right. Something like that.
I'll have to add that to my list of questions for Hannah on Friday.
There you go.
Yeah, my favorite word is stretch. Drink water and stretch after we climb.
Okay. I can dig that. All right. So where you said you had an Instagram. What is that Instagram handle?
The Instagram is Hans Hartnett. So same spelling as the website without the hyphen.
So one word, Hans, Hartnett.
Exactly. Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right, cool. So you got the heart-net.com, Hans Hartnett. Those are your primary communication
yes.
when people want to reach you?
Yep. I also have my phone number listed on my website. People are welcome to text me anytime.
Awesome. You know what? That's just a great example of like someone who is just like plugged in and, you know, like seriously, it's that, because like I said, it's such a big thing. There's this disconnect in the, you know, medical world and everything like that. And it's cool to see that you're connecting with your patients when they need you, you know, you're just there. So, definitely reach out to Dr. Hartnett, right? You are required She has already slipped me a piece of paper across the desk. She said, people are required to call me Dr. Hartnett. No, I'm joking. But reach out to her. You've got the Instagram handle. Check out the website. And I mean, you know, overall, just again, as someone who appreciates the, you know, long-term health thing, you know, I hope people are out there stretching, as you said. I need to take that advice now because I'm gonna feel.
I should have brought you the handout. I'll have to email it to you.
Yeah, because I'm gonna feel terrible next time I I go to the gym and like I don't stretch. So I'm gonna be doing the stretches. Check those out. I'm super pumped up to learn about what those stretches are outside of the one that I saw. But yeah, reach out to her. Emily, dude, I really appreciate you coming out today.
Thanks for having me. This was awesome.
Yeah. So check her out, guys. If we can climb longer, I think that's if we can climb longer and forever, you know, I think that's the absolute key, because I don't know what I'd do if I messed up my hands and or I got this tendonitis and I couldn't climb and that was the only mitigating factor. That would be not good. So awesome. Emily, thanks again for coming on.
Great. Thank you so much.
Hey everyone, this is your host, Jared Hazel. Just wanted to thank you all for listening to the Denver Crux podcast. As a friendly reminder, make sure when you're out there, leave no trace. If you see a water bottle or something on the trail, pick it up, toss it in the trash later. Helps out everyone. A lot of these local trails and climbs, there is management that goes behind them, so if anyone can give back, whether it's giving a buck or two or some volunteer time to the Access Fund, to your local climbing council or coalition, do so. Make sure you're not running your ropes through that fixed hardware up there. It does wear down over time, so just something to keep in mind, some good etiquette. The podcast is always looking for new guests, so whether or not you've been climbing for a month or 50 years, I'd love to have you on and share the experience. So if anyone wants to reach out at any time, feel free. My Instagram handle for the podcast is Denver Crux Podcast. So, with that said, everyone, climb safe, go out there and do dangerous things carefully.